Kind of nice to come into the end of the week with some good things happening in Ohio. One of the chief ones is the move on childcare. Another one is the move on ending some animal cruelty. That's good, because normally when we're talking about what Ohio's doing, it's kind of depressing. Let's have some good news for a change on Today in Ohio. It's the news podcast discussion from Cleveland.com and The Plain Dealer. I'm Chris Quinn, here with Layla Atassi, Laura Johnston, and Lisa Garvin. Layla, let's start with you. Is Ohio Attorney General Dave Yost missing the forest for the trees? While he talks about holding Democrats to the letter of the law to get Joe Biden's name on the November ballot, legal scholars tell us that's the wrong issue. What do they say is the real issue here?
The legal experts are looking at how the U.S. Supreme Court has ruled on cases involving states' interpretation of the insurrection clause of the 14th Amendment. Because in both Colorado and Maine, Donald Trump had been barred from the ballot, and officials cited that clause that said anyone who participated in insurrection could not hold federal office. So the Supreme Court struck down the state's application of that. And they cited the implications for national elections if states were to make their own inconsistent interpretations of the clause rather than Congress setting a nationwide standard. So that doesn't directly apply to what's happening in Ohio, where we're talking about the state's deadline for making the ballot. But the experts told Andrew Tobias that the underlying logic still applies. Paul Schiff Berman, who's a professor at George Washington University Law School, said the thrust of that decision was that the Supreme Court didn't think that state ballot decisions and federal elections law should keep people off the ballot in general. And in a letter to Secretary of State Frank LaRose earlier this month, Don McTighe, who's a Democratic elections attorney in Columbus, also cited that March U.S. Supreme Court decision. Specifically, he referred to the court's citation of another U.S. Supreme Court case that has to do with presidential candidate deadlines. It's one from 1983 in which the court struck down what was then Ohio's deadline for independent presidential candidates. They ruled that by requiring independent candidates to file in March, which is earlier than the requirement for major party candidates, the old Ohio law unconstitutionally discriminated against independent voters. So between those two cases, the 1983 case and the one from March involving Trump, both said that state ballot rules affecting presidential candidates implicate a uniquely important national interest, since a decision by a single state has the potential to tip the entire election. So with that in mind, the experts say it would be highly likely that the Democrats would prevail in a case against the state to ensure Biden makes the ballot despite this deadline.
We've been saying all week that the focus by the leading Republicans on the letter of this law is the mistake. They're playing with semantics, while this big picture, the forest, is this would lead to Ohioans being denied a chance to vote on their presidential candidate. So it's not just unconstitutional, it violates all sense of common sense. And it did seem like Matt Huffman figured that out a couple days ago when he said, yeah, of course, you get to vote for your candidate. It's just been surprising how myopic they've been in going, well, the law says the law. You can't pass a law blocking a candidate from being on the ballot. If states could do that, don't you think that across the country you'd see the blue states ruling that Trump can't be on their ballot and the red states ruling that Biden couldn't be on their ballot? It would create abject chaos. It's a bad law. It always was. That's why they have to keep passing these amendments to get exceptions. And it would be illegal. So this is good. I'm glad the scholars are seeing the forest that our chief legal officer of the state is too blind to see and is putting party over the people. You are listening to Today in Ohio. All of a sudden, Laura, Ohio is moving on childcare. Last week, it was Mike DeWine proposing a lot more in subsidies. This week, it's a Republican bill that would dramatically reduce childcare costs in the state. What is the proposal? And look outside, man. Has hell frozen over?
I think this deserves an exclamation point. So I had one in our wake up newsletter today because I think this is just such great news for the state of Ohio. And frankly, didn't think it would be coming this year at all. But Republican legislators are proposing a childcare solution. And they're looking outside the box a little bit. We're not just messing with the subsidy rates or something like that. They're looking to Michigan, which came up with this tri-share plan in 2021, started small, it's expanded to 59 counties in Michigan, they have 83 counties there, to spend state money to pay a third of childcare. So businesses pay a third, parents pay a third, and the state pays a third. And the idea is that we all share the burden because it's good if parents can work. And this has been successful so far. In this state, the program would be open to families making up to 300% of the federal poverty line. That goes up to about nearly $100,000 for a family of four. And the state would appropriate $10 million to get this up and running. They think it could cost $100 to $200 million every year. But when you think about what they're spending on private school vouchers, which is $1 billion this year, that doesn't seem like a whole lot of money. And Johnson's smart enough to know that the state's going to save on some other benefits by doing this program. For example, SNAP. If more parents are working because their kids are in childcare, they won't have to spend that on the food program for families that don't have a lot of money.
And ultimately, the state recovers the investment entirely, as our stories have shown. I got to say, tip of the hat, you launched this project early last year when no one in Ohio was talking about this. And we realized that Ohio was among the worst in the nation, if not the worst, at subsidizing childcare. We started this thing and you got the resistance and we just kept going and going. And everybody's minds have changed, except maybe Matt Huffman's. But there's a huge movement here. This is good for people. It's good for economic development. The governor's behind it. Republicans in the legislature are behind it. I'm amazed that we're sitting here today talking about this, because for most of last year, it felt like you were just looking at an insurmountable mountain to climb.
I completely agree with you. When Jeremy Peltzer wrote his story in December about how legislators were sitting on their hands, that was the whole truth. We weren't seeing any kind of movement. I felt like I was banging my head against a wall. When we wrote about it, I would inevitably get people that wrote me and said, if you have kids, you need to pay for them. Stop expecting everyone to take care of you. When I was trying to make this argument, we are trying to make this argument that it is an economic boon for everyone to get these parents some help, because childcare is incredibly expensive. They're talking about $10,000 a year for an infant. I think I was paying that when my 13-year-old was 6 months old. So I think that's probably low for this. It is incredibly expensive. We need parents to have kids so that we have a new job force. We want the state to grow. It's good if ever, you know, it's good for people to have kids. And this is an ultimate good, because you're right, we will recoup this investment. Every dollar spent from the public on childcare ends up saving up to $9 in the future on all sorts of social services. And it's, so far, a lot of states have used this opportunity. And I'm so glad, because COVID did give us a restart button here, and we're using it.
Look, it's the right thing to do. I mean, and that's what we've been pushing with this series. This isn't some lefty agenda thing. This is good for everybody. But man, it makes me proud of what we do. And it's kind of a reminder to people who are on our platforms that having a robust media in town makes a difference. I don't believe this is happening if it weren't for Cleveland.com and The Plain Dealer and Today in Ohio and all of our other platforms. This is what happens when you have a watchful media. So way to go, Laura.
And I want to tell everybody who's listening that they can make a difference here too, right? We don't know that this bill is going to pass, but it's more likely to pass if you go to your legislator and say, this is a good idea. If you talk to your business, your company, and say, I really think we should get on board with this, because it does take buy-in from the businesses. The Ohio Chamber of Commerce is supportive. Even the state of Cleveland, or sorry, the city of Cleveland says this is a common sense approach. They'd love to be able to offer it for their employees. They just don't know how to balance the budget. They were not talking about it either.
Yeah, they'll figure it out.
Yeah.
You're listening to Today in Ohio. J.D. Vance appears to be the Senate poster child for appeasement of Russia, evidently having skipped school when they were teaching about World War II and the lessons we should never forget. He's in the minority on this one, fortunately, Lisa, but why is he arguing against seizing Russian assets in America and giving them to Ukraine, which is cash-strapped in its battle to hold off the invaders?
Yeah, we're talking about the Rebuilding Economic Prosperity and Opportunity Act, also known as REPO. And as you said, it would seize Russian assets frozen in the United States and transfer them to Ukraine. It was approved in a bipartisan vote by both the House and Senate Foreign Relations Committees as part of a package for Israel, Ukraine, and Taiwan. And like I said, you know, an Ohio Congress members got behind it from both parties, Democrats Marcy Kaptur and Greg Landsman. Also, Republicans Mike Turner and Max Miller co-sponsored this bill. But Senator Vance says in a social media video, he says he wants that legislation killed. He says this is a way for Democrats to undermine Donald Trump if he gets reelected to the presidency. And he says, why are we giving tools to control the Trump administration next year? Making him sound like it's going to happen. And he says it will also make the current sanctions regime on Russia an act of Congress, requiring their approval to remove it. And it would hinder future peace negotiations, not only with Russia, but at others, you know, in other countries as well.
Yeah. I Vance is like, give them Ukraine, maybe give them Poland, maybe give them France. At some point, when do you draw the line? He just doesn't get that the world learned in World War II, you can't ever appease. And he has been dead focused on just letting Russia have its way, an amazing thing for a senator in Ohio to be pushing.
And some Republicans have said, you know, like House Foreign Affairs Committee Chair Michael McCaul, a Republican from Texas, he actually took a dig at the Biden administration, but he said, you know, we really need the Repo Act to keep Biden from eagerly making big concessions to U.S. adversaries, and it would prevent trading Russian state assets before they can compensate Ukraine. So he said this would be a powerful deterrent.
Yeah, it's a good idea. I think anybody that knows that, Ukraine falling to Russia is bad, bad news for the world and for Europe. This is a good thing to do to try and help in that cause. But everything in America gets politicized, whether it's right or wrong. J.D. Vance is way over on the wrong side on this one. You're listening to Today in Ohio. It's kind of hard to believe that this isn't already the law, but there's a set of people that have had to sit through jury duty in incredible hardship. It's something you know about, Layla, and how is it about to change?
Yeah, DeWine is about to sign House Bill 34, which excuses nursing mothers from jury duty. And this is a bill that simply expands the circumstances under which a prospective juror can be excused from jury service to include a mother who's breastfeeding her baby who's age one or younger. And the nursing exemption would be part of existing exemptions for people who have extreme physical or financial hardships. The judge would need a signed affidavit stating the prospective juror is a mother who's breastfeeding. 22 states and Puerto Rico have laws similar to this, or they let nursing mothers postpone their jury service. Two Republican state representatives sponsor this bill after they heard of the story of a mother who had been called to jury duty shortly after giving birth. Surprisingly, one Democrat state senator, Paula Hicks Hudson from Toledo, who voted for it, also noted that the Ohio Judicial Conference, which represents judges, expressed concerns about the bill. She said that most judges excuse nursing mothers and House Bill 34 would take away a judge's discretion. But personally, I think that's an argument just for the sake of argument here. If we agree as a society that nursing mothers should get a reprieve from this duty, then I don't think the judge should get the discretion at that point. The affidavit should suffice.
Well, let me interrupt you because that argument still requires a nursing mother to go to the courthouse. You don't get excused until you're called to the courtroom and they're impaneling
the jury. Until you're called to the courtroom.
This would allow the mother to never have to head down to the courthouse, which is in Cleveland
That's a huge
hassle because parking is a pain.
It is. And I can speak to that. Personally, I went to jury duty while I was nursing. I took a pump with me, and this was at the old Justice Center, so you can bet they didn't have a great space to pump. I believe I had a locking door, but I definitely had to lug along a cooler to store pumped milk, and it was difficult. And if you miss a pumping session when your body has grown accustomed to a certain schedule, not only is it extremely uncomfortable, but it diminishes your milk supply. And breastfeeding is very challenging for a lot of women on top of the sleep deprivation and exhaustion that comes with being a new parent. And I just think this reprieve from jury duty is one recognition of that. So yeah, you should not be told you have to come down. And I never got impaneled to a jury. I sat there for 3 days waiting to see if I'd be called up. And I and I didn't. So I would have loved to be able to take that burden off my plate at that moment in my life when so much else was going on for me. So, yeah.
I wonder how that legislator we talked about yesterday voted on this one. He is voting to help women out, or if he...
I thought about that.
You're listening to...
I know.
Yeah, I mean,
I know.
I bet he probably voted against it. Or he wants women in the home when he voted for it. Who knows? You're listening to Today in Ohio.
Well, remember, he has 10 kids. Remember that, Chris? Yeah. That guy's got 10 kids.
How big of a deal is a playoff run by the Cavs to downtown businesses like restaurants, Laura?
This is a huge deal. And it's not just because the arena is going to be full, although that is a big part of it. And we're expecting more than 20,000 fans for every game. And those people are probably going to be in a really good mood, especially if the Cavs win. And they're going to want to eat before or after the game. What I didn't think about before this story from Mark Bona is that the 1 p.m. games, which that's what Saturday is a real boon for these businesses because people come downtown earlier. If you have a 7 p.m. tip off, you're not going to get there till maybe 4 o'clock, right? If you have a 1 o'clock, you might come for lunch, you might stay for dinner. If it's a nice day, you might wander around. And so this could be huge for all the downtown businesses, and millions of dollars will come from playoff games. The finals runs have tacked on $100 million in economic impact in the past. I think that's probably mostly 2016 when we actually won the championship, but big games bring in more fans and more fans bring their wallets downtown.
Yeah, every night that they play in town is just the extra gigantic crowd. So it's very tangible and countable. The trick is, and they talked about this, can they get them in town earlier, keep them later to keep them frequenting the businesses? I think there's probably more of a celebratory spirit after they win games than if they lose games.
Maybe they need to drown their sorrows, though. Need a pint to take the edge off.
Yeah, it'd be nice if they make it out of the first round, unlike last year, because that's a bunch more games they get to play. It's also kind of surprising. They've been selling out games now for multiple seasons. They are a hot ticket.
They are. So good luck to the Cavs, and I hope everybody's ready for the crowds.
You're listening to Today in Ohio. Northeast Ohio is not what you think of as tornado country, but we do get them, and we had a warning about them Wednesday. Lisa, did one materialize?
The National Weather Service confirmed that an EF1 tornado touched down in Portage County Wednesday evening. It was a four-mile path through Windham Township. It was 65 yards wide and stayed on the ground for about 6 minutes. Most of the damage occurred near Bryant Road and Ohio 303. There were no injuries reported, thank goodness, but there was quite a bit of damage. They did have to shut down the Ohio Turnpike in Portage County for several hours. There was apparently a pileup of three semis after a weather-related incident. There were also downed power lines and several homes damaged. But the National Weather Service later confirmed four other tornadoes Wednesday night. There were two EF0s. One was in Trumbull County in Southington and Champion Townships, the other in Champaign County, north of US 36. There were two EF1s, one in Bucyrus and another in Harlem Township.
It's kind of cool that they were able to issue the warning and they had it right, that the conditions were right, because clearly they were and we got hit with them. Be terrifying to live through one of those, especially in some of our crowded neighborhoods where you have a lot of big trees.
And apparently Ohio is leading the nation right now this year. As many as 38 tornadoes have been confirmed in Ohio just so far this year.
Yeah, we haven't had any of those enormous ones that you'll see in Oklahoma, but it doesn't matter when the winds get that high. It does seem like if you're going into any of the local parks, there are some trees that have been down from our big windstorms of late. You're listening to Today in Ohio. What is the latest on the Progressive Campus in Mayfield in this era of remote and hybrid work? Layla, there was a development yesterday.
Yeah, the latest is that Progressive is consolidating their operations and officially listing their headquarters in Mayfield for sale or lease. Progressive announced in July that it would close its main headquarters on Wilson Mills Road and move the headquarters to what it calls its second campus on North Commons Boulevard, which is also in Mayfield. So the main campus, as well as offices in Colorado, Indiana, and two offices in Florida, would soon be listed for sale. And about a year and a half ago, they listed two other buildings in Eastside suburbs, one of which was purchased for $17 million by Park Place Technologies. And as you said, you know, this is largely because, you know, we're in a situation now where people are working from home a lot. The pandemic really started that trend. The workforce has adapted in a way that they really have no need to come into the office as they once did, which is what a lot of companies are discovering. First Energy announced in May would vacate its downtown Akron headquarters and consolidate its other offices in the city. And in late 2022, Medical Mutual said that it would leave the Rose Building in downtown Cleveland and consolidate in its Brooklyn offices. So it's a sign of the times.
You have to wonder, though, with all that you just said, who would want this enormous campus? What other employer might have need for something so big? Is it time for a thoughtful reuse of it?
Yeah, right. I mean, and that's what local officials say. They're optimistic that this change could be good, that it could make room for new enterprises to move in. But the trick is, in this era, you know, how many companies are looking for 600,000 square feet of office space when so many of their employees work from home or are remote, you know, or hybrid?
Maybe we could turn it into condos, just like all the buildings downtown.
Or tear it down and build houses. I mean, Mayfield is a destination. Layla, you mentioned in a previous episode of this podcast that in your early years as a reporter, you did a story about what it was like to live out there.
Yeah. I mean, I personally didn't try to live out there, but I did a story about how Mayfield was kind of the new version of the company town.
Oh, I totally
where
remember
it was.
This.
Yeah, remember it was like it's a village that basically is built around this monolith of Progressive, and Progressive was its own world. I mean, I remember mm-hmm. getting a tour of that place. They had everything in there, not only cafeterias and they had like a full gym in there for their employees, and the place was just bustling. It was like its own. I likened the building to like a spaceship crash landing in the middle of Mayfield. Like it just was kind of this big, you know, just plopped out. Everyone was in the shadow of Progressive.
It's a beautiful campus. It really is. And it's right next to 271. So, and I have noticed a traffic decrease right there at Mayfield and 271 during rush hour. Definitely.
We keep saying that Cuyahoga County is built out, that there, other than single little sites, there's no place to really develop residential housing or downtown. This is an enormous tract of land. There's not really a demand for a big office building. And if possible, Mayfield could probably turn this into pretty decent residential housing, get more residents into the county paying taxes. You're listening to Today in Ohio. Federal marshals in Northeast Ohio shot and killed someone Thursday. We should always take note when law enforcement kills somebody. Laura, who was he and what caused the shooting?
This is a 34-year-old Lorraine man. He had failed to appear in court, and his name is Derek Smith. He attacked three officers with a wooden table leg, swinging it like a baseball bat, according to the marshals. So they attempted to control the man twice by firing a stun gun. And this is a deputy U.S. Marshal and two task force members that basically go after people with warrants who are supposed to show up in court, but don't. And Smith had pleaded guilty to federal drug charges, including a small amount of fentanyl in 2021. But he has suffered from severe mental health problems for years. Schizophrenia and bipolar disorder were mentioned in his file since he was a teenager. So he fought back, even with the stun gun, and the three officers ended up taken to a local hospital for injuries. They suffered lacerations to the head, arm, and back. And so I'm not sure which one of them shot him, but they did. And the last time the task force had been involved in a shooting was December 2020. You probably remember that, when there was a fugitive from Pennsylvania at Steelyard Commons who pulled a gun when they attempted to arrest him.
This is just a horrible situation. You have clearly a very mentally ill person who's become quite violent. They're just there to take him in. It sounds like they tried not to use deadly force a bunch of times, but they were getting injured. And so they finally through and shot tragedy all the way around. Mental health crises are just difficult for police to deal with.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're listening to Today in Ohio. Let's end on a sweet note, Lisa, and a salty one. What's the potentially tasty product the two Cleveland foodie operations are collaborating on?
Cleveland-based Mally's Chocolate is teaming with Barrio Restaurants to create Coco Loco. They are chocolate-covered tortilla chips, the chocolate from Mally's, of course, and the tortilla chips from Barrio's, which are allegedly famous, although I've never tasted them. And then they're going to be covered with zesty lime sea salt. They'll be available at Mally's stores, not online. They'll be available beginning Wednesday, May 1st, until they are sold out. They're $18.95, but I'm not sure what the unit is. Is it a bag? Is it a box? I really don't know. Barrio and Mally's have collaborated on products before, but this was years ago. And Mally's has also worked with Brewnuts and Platform Beer on some products. So pretty cool to, you know, put Cleveland chocolate on all kinds of stuff.
I'm betting these sell out immediately and they'll keep making them. The picture that we ran had a bag that didn't look all that big, but you know, how big a bag of chocolate covered chips do you need?
So. Yeah, but the bag didn't have the chocolate chips in them. That was my question. And they had a bag of Barrio tortilla chips without chocolate with some chocolate ones spread around it. So I don't know if they're going to come in a bag or what. Oh, I'd love to know that. And I, you know, I'm a fan of sweet and salty. I mean, I love chocolate covered pretzels, and they had me until that zesty lime sea salt, because I am like so over salted chocolate and caramel now. It's like, who needs more sodium?
Oh, I think it sounds so good. And I've had chocolate covered potato chips before. Mm-hmm. Those are kind of amazing. So
tell you what, if we can get some, you can all sample it and we can do a tasting on the podcast. And Mally's chocolate isn't gluten-free or it's not guaranteed to be gluten-free. So I probably can't eat it, but you guys could taste it and tell us if it's worth getting. Something to look forward to if we can get them. You're listening to Today in Ohio. That's it for the Friday episode. We'll be back Monday. Have a great weekend. Thanks, Lisa. Thanks, Laura. Thanks, Layla. Thanks, everybody, for listening.